ever hear about that and get no benefit from it. There's a woman sitting in California now who, I believe, at one time or another was a communist or very closely associated with them, Anna Louise Strong. I've met her in various places of the world, and she always seemed to be very close to the communists, who is virtually, although she was expelled from Poland, from Russia, by Stalin, is still virtually excluded from the public press, absolutely excluded from the public press, and from any other approach to the public or to the government, who therefore, because she has something to express, has been turning out her own little mimeograph newsletter and mailing it to various people. I'm on her mailing list. And it's a pitiful thing that here is this woman who really knows about Mao. She's lived in the same building with Mao and his wife, the leader of the communist Chinese. Her predictions or her forecast on current events in Korea and China, judging from these newsletters that I've been reading, have been uncannily good. She knew, or at least she said she knew, that the Chinese would not permit us to use military force along the Manchurian border and to occupy the border between Korea and Manchuria. Anyway, the point of it is that Anna Louise Strong, and whatever knowledge, right or wrong, she has, and whatever experience she has had, is excluded from the national scene. Well, that's one of the asides I wanted to make, and I think that's one of the barricades that confront us. And it's a barricade, again, that we can surmount ourselves, that it has nothing whatever to do with Mr. Stalin or Russia or anybody else. And it takes nothing but courage. But it takes a lot of courage. And you people who are affiliated closely with the university know how much courage it's going to take and has taken to really stand up for academic freedom. And I'm sure that things will not get much better, which is the prize understatement of the day. Now, the other side of the coin that I wanted to talk about today, other than the one about that Mr. Nuveen, I think, discussed, can be put this way. I said to you a few moments ago that during this period, 1933 to 1939, many of us in the business of reporting events in Europe felt that the truth was unwanted, undesired, and unacceptable. And what we considered to be the truth was a very simple thing. We looked, Edgar Ansel Maurer, for example, who looked at the German scene as a very talented and very expert observer, and in 1934 wrote a book, Hitler Turns the Clock Back, I think it was called, which said in very clear language that Mein Kampf is literally the program of the Hitler regime, and that this government is founded solely for conquest, and that its appetite is without limit. Now, that seemed so apparent to us from the nature of the regime itself. If you saw Mussolini's system functioning as I did in the early 30s, you realize that he could not afford to disarm. He could not afford to reduce armaments. He could not afford to let Ethiopia go without a war. He had to have a war. And he was pleased to send his unemployed, who were creating a little trouble, to Spain when Franco started a war. He had to have a war. It was the dynamics of his organization meant war and meant conquest. That seemed very clear to us. Now, it seems equally clear to me now that the dynamics of the Soviet system, of the communist systems that have been imposed on other countries by the Russians, that the dynamics of those systems are not the same as those of the Nazi or fascist systems. I do not propose to be very dogmatic about this because God help anyone who is dogmatic about the Russians. But it is my opinion that the sole purpose of the communist system, now 34 years old, or the Soviet system, whatever you want to call it, in Russia, is not conquest, nor war, nor the acquisition of other people's territory. That it has other reasons for existing. That at least on paper, it does not reject peace and glorify war, as these other people did. On paper, it does not reject the ideals of the Christian traditions. On paper, it accepts them. It pretends to be democratic. It even aspires, apparently, to be democratic because it wrote a constitution which, if ever enforced, even to the extent that our own constitution is enforced, and I better not mention constitution in the state of Illinois, that constitution aspires to the ideals of democracy. As a plain observer, without any knowledge of anything going on anywhere except what I can see, it seems to me that what I saw between 33 and 39 is not what I am seeing between 43 and 51. The new communism that has spread up has been imposed on Europe and not been imposed, but has acquired China. That new communism varies from place to place, but in no place, as far as I can see it, does it preach war, does it require war or conquest. The people of Russia, when I was there, and I think up to now, and I've been reading the Russian press in translation as much as I can, are not being told that war is a good thing, or that war is necessary, or that they must expand, or that there was an unjust peace treaty that they must write, or that the honor of the country is at stake, or any of the things that the Germans were told, or the Italians. They are being told simply that war is going to be made upon them by capitalist states, because Marx said that would happen, and Lenin said that would happen, and because they can see it is happening. And that, therefore, they must be ready to defend themselves. I do not believe, therefore, that the communist states of the world, bad as they are, totalitarian as they are, dictatorships among the worst the world has ever seen, are unappeasable. I think they're appeasable. And I use the word appease in the strict dictionary Webster sense of compromise and quid pro quo. There is another meaning to that word, appease, which is illustrated by a story I heard yesterday. The story, as usual, involves the going to heaven of Stalin, Hitler, and Winston Churchill. And approaching the pearly gates, and St. Peter tells them that in view of their outstanding services on earth, he would grant them, before they entered heaven, grant each of them one last earthly wish. And so Hitler immediately piped up and said, "Well, St. Peter, my wish is that all the Russians be exterminated." Stalin, who heard that, answered, "My wish, St. Peter, is that all the Germans be exterminated." And Mr. Churchill waited. And St. Peter said, "Well, Mr. Churchill, what about your wish?" Well, he said, "Tell me, St. Peter, are you going to grant the wishes of Stalin and Hitler?" And St. Peter said, "Yes, of course." Well, then Churchill lighted a cigar and said, "I'll take a whiskey and soda." That kind of appeasement is the kind of appeasement we attempted to have in 1938. And the Russians attempted to have in 1939, where you appease A, you're B, and you appease A so that he will attack C. They tried to do it, succeeded for a short time, and then failed. We tried to do it and failed. That's an old kind of appeasement, morally unjustified, of course, but politically very, very commonplace. And personally, I can see no reason why we shouldn't indulge in that kind of appeasement, if it were possible. But where is C? There isn't any C. How can we get Russia to fight C when there isn't any C? How can they get us to fight C when there isn't any C? The appeasement of the 38s is not possible. And while it haunts us, and we're ashamed of it, and it failed, and therefore we don't want to repeat it, we have memories long enough to recall that failure. We cannot repeat it. And I feel that in the other sense of appeasement, bargaining, there is no evidence yet that the Soviet system is unappeasable. No evidence at all on the record. Nor is there any evidence that they are insatiable and don't have a limited appetite. They have shown signs of very great control over their appetite. Why they didn't acquire more of Europe after we demobilized so hastily in 1945, I cannot explain, except to say that they controlled themselves. The Europe was there. Why did they let us into Vienna? If force is the only thing they understand, our force was dissipated. Nor do I believe that they are totally irrational in their conduct. I don't believe that they are bound by any thesis any more than we are, or any theories. It's my opinion that communism as a theory is certainly no more successful than Christianity as a theory. And you know that in Christian countries, it is customary not to practice Christianity all the time. That is the second prize understatement of the day. The communists are not irrational. They are not insatiable. I say communists, I mean the Soviet government. They do not seem to be bent on conquest. And so the other side of the coin that bothers me most at the moment is the premise that they are identical with our late enemies, the Germans, the Japs, and the Italians, that anything we do now is bound to be the same as the appeasement of 1939 and therefore bound to fail, and that war is inevitable. Now, that's a perfectly logical sequence if you accept the premise. If you accept the premise, there's no use my talking to you or you talking to me. Our duty is clear. Let's arm, go underground, and start the war, or at least wait until it started and fight it. There isn't any question. If that is true, there's nothing we can do. There's no sea. There's no out. If the premise is not true, and I don't know whether it's true or untrue, if the premise is not true, the conclusion is in itself fatal. Because if we believe it and act as if we believed it, we'll start the war. And it seems to me that at the present time, too many of us are believing it as if it was dogmatically, certainly true, which it is not, and acting upon it as if there was no question about it, and acting upon it in a way that is almost certainly bringing about the thing which we do not want, war, World War III, a war which I believe will never end or will seem endless, will have no political purpose in it whatsoever, like the Korean War, and will bring us nothing. It will not be a crusade. We will not bring Christianity, if that's what we call it, or democracy, to any place. We will reduce it. Communism breeds and thrives on war. And so the last barricade that I wanted to mention the day before closing is that one. And that, again, is something we ourselves can handle. Now, I agree that if Mr. Stalin or his successors start a war or do something that is clearly inviting a war, there isn't much we can do about it. I agree that, of course, we must be prepared and should have been prepared and should have used force and strength with them in every occasion possible ever since the beginning of World War II and during World War II, when they never ceased to consider us their opponents. I agree with that. But I cannot agree that we should go that final step and create in this country an economy and a social atmosphere that makes war necessary. Build up an economy and an atmosphere that makes us prefer war to a continuation of that which we have. That is, to my mind, the greatest mistake and the greatest, the fatal error of them all. And that is the last barricade, to control the war party in the United States, to keep it from beginning a war. And remember that it's not too difficult to begin a war if you let these people maneuver us into situations that are provocative. There are many possible ones and one already right before us. If we cross in or bomb China, Manchuria, we are beginning World War III. Nobody seems to remember that China and Russia have a treaty of alliance calling upon the Russians to come to the aid of China as soon as she's attacked by anyone.